You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 16th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live, fresh from reading the best review of the worst restaurant in America. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
How are ya?
Apparently hiring the Carl's Jr. guy was to upgrade the Trump restaurant from the shittiest restaurant in America to something where you can at least get decent fries.
Yeah, I hear the fries there are just terrible at the Trump grill or grill-y, depending on how his mood, depending on what Trump's mood is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's
the
that.
The reason we know about this is because, would you like to tell them, Blue Gal?
Graydon Carter wrote an article, or he published an article. His restaurant reviewer wrote an article about how terrible and shitty Trump's restaurant is, and Donald Trump decided to tweet an angry tweet about it.
His everything from the art on the wall to the experience in the bathrooms to the really shitty service to the kind of waiters trained to answer questions in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like this is what poor people think rich should look like.
Yeah, right.
Hollow, greasy awfulness of his shitty restaurant. And apparently the president-elect did not like his restaurant being reviewed so shamefully.
Well, and I'm not too sure about that. As I said in my post over at Crooks and Liars today, there's also an article on it from last week up at Vanity Fair that is about Donald Trump's interview back in the day, back in the second wife day, when he was interviewed by Playboy and featured in Playboy. And he was a terrible, empty soul who lied all the time and damaged his own property to prove a point. Mm-hmm. And so the guy who interviewed him for this said, you know, he was the first subject I ever interviewed who tried to bribe me to write a better story. And, by giving him a book deal. I need somebody to write my next book.
It'd be great if you could do that for me.
They're always bestsellers. All my books are bestsellers, you know. And that was so that article came out last week. And it's possible that Trump noticed, although, you know, who knows? Who knows what happened? But the point is that he has time to have a Twitter feud with Vanity Fair. Mm-hmm. But Sean Spicer, his transition spokesperson, says he's way too busy building his cabinet to actually give us a press conference ever, forever.
And I kind of sympathize because he has those very, very tiny hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the point.
With very tiny hands can be very difficult.
Well, and that Trump's tweet specifically name-checked Graydon Carter, which had to make Graydon Carter's whole year. Like, thank you. Because Graydon Carter and Kurt Anderson were at Spy Magazine back in the day.
Right.
And they're the ones that came up with the term short-fingered vulgarian for Donald Trump.
Yeah, which he hasn't.
Exactly.
Dwell on how this thin-skinned, hollow, rich, boorish, racist asshole, who's now the president of the United States, harbors petty grudges for decades and uses whatever tools he can lay his hands on to punish people who say mean things about him.
Well, and still apparently sends Graydon Carter pictures of his hands with his hands circled in Sharpie pen.
Yes, dang.
Because he's that weak. And so he calls Graydon Carter a no-talent.
Vanity and, Fair, very bad, very bad. Sad magazine, going to be dead soon. It'll be over.
Okay. And in the meantime, you know, this article has been tweeted 30,100 times as of this recording. Yeah. So, you know, he's going to have a great, great day, that Graydon Carter. And Nick Jack Pappas tweeted today to say, a lot of worries about this election would be fixed if we can convince Vladimir Putin to write a bad review of the Trump grill.
Well, that was the big story that came out just after we wrapped up last week's podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Russian hacking.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that we didn't really already know this. I mean, every time someone mentioned WikiLeaks on Twitter for the past 4 or 5 months, and I'm not wired into anything more than any average citizen, you know, in terms of Russian hacking. But it was so obvious that this information from WikiLeaks had been stolen by somebody who really knew what they were doing.
Yep.
There were lots of indications in the press, in the media, that these leaks were coming from state-sponsored terrorists, state-sponsored hackers, Russia. And so now it's...
Well, then there was the case of Hillary Clinton in the debate.
Yes.
Saying 17 different intelligence agencies agreed that Russia hacked this election. So... this again, this is a theme of our bit of a theme for the podcast this week. It's memory.
Yeah.
It's these people just don't remember because they don't want to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, they saw, they had to see. They themselves said hours or days or weeks ago because it becomes very ideologically inconvenient. So the story is nobody talked about this.
Yep.
They waited until Hillary lost, and now they're upset because they're a bunch of losers and whiny baby people. Which is not true on the face of it, but it's also just stupid because you can, you know, once again, one more conservative lie. You can just go back and look at the video and show them that this is wrong. Except, this is very important, that will not change their mind because
the people that I think are the most scared, because as you say, the conservative mindset is, well, it didn't affect the outcome. And, you know, the fact that it was transparent, you know, we know he stole it in plain sight. So this is. And Donald Trump had nothing to do with it, which we're finding out. You know, there were super PACs involved in defeating congressional candidates using this information.
Yeah.
So
this is an RNC thing.
This is. Uh-huh. And so we know that the conservatives are not going to accept culpability. But I think the people that are really afraid about this are people in the media. The New York Times actually said, you know, we were not planning on being willing bullhorns for the Russian government. That was not our intent.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, this is where both sides has real consequences. There were real consequences to the way you decided to cover this election. And you cannot pretend that you in the media, New York Times, CNN, Mrs. Greenspan, that you were just, you know, reporting the controversy, standing above it and not being a participant in the story. Not the story is about you and how you decided that emails and whatever came out of WikiLeaks was the story.
Mm-hmm.
And
every
single day for 4 weeks before the election, that was the story.
And that because they didn't come out all at once. They came out batched by, you know, if you hacked 30,000 emails, you're going to batch them so that you hit them with 1,000 every day.
Mm-hmm.
Only one of the two parties was beaten every day by the same group of people for the same motive, which was to elect Donald Trump. And you have to be absolutely dishonest as a journalist to pretend that that wasn't the calculation. Now, you could say, well, you know, the news value outweighed the source, but now you've succeeded. And this really is remarkably similar in a lot of ways to the Iraq War.
Yes.
The run-up to the Iraq War was a decision by most, not all, but most news outlets to roll over for one of our two major political parties, to roll over for the Republicans, to just be transcribers of whatever they said. You had the Fox News cheerleaders, which you always have. You had the hate radio cheerleaders, which you always have. And then you had the people in the middle who were just like, well, you know, who can say what's true? Who knows? Here's just a bunch of stuff. You figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, shit, I can. Why do I need you then? If my job is to figure out what you're putting in front of me is true or false, then maybe you should be fired. because we don't really need you. We don't need an intermediary. But it was to shovel the party line of the Republican Party out there. And it worked. And it worked.
Yeah.
The news media marketed and this is what Dick Cheney said.
Yep.
When he talked about Meet the Press, that it was the best.
Yeah.
Launching pad for his bullshit of all the shows on Sunday.
This
is why the New York Times, this is why they faked up stories, put them in the New York Times, then quoted their own stories the next day.
Right.
Because they know the news media are run by fucking bean counters and cowards who will not do the hard work of journalism.
Or who will do anything for ratings. Yep.
Until after the fact. And after the fact, oh, my God. Oh, how did this ever happen? You know what I think happened, Blue Gal? I think really both sides failed and let us down. I think really both sides screwed the pooch.
And this happened again this week in terms of the anniversary of Sandy Hook, where news reports, you know, putting stories out to their credit about the anniversary of Sandy Hook said, and the Senate failed to pass a bill doing anything about guns. You know, it was just the Senate failed. Obama failed to get anything through the Senate.
Right. It's a passive voice.
Yeah.
The system.
Yeah.
Again.
It has never saying Republicans blocked. Republicans blocked. And it is that kind of reporting that damages democracy as much as Putin ever could.
Right.
And we need to remember that and we need to say it. Mm-hmm. And this is going to happen with Obamacare as well.
Yes.
It's not going to be the Republicans' responsibility to repeal this, take away health care for 20 million people. It's going to be the Senate disagrees.
Right.
You know, the senators disagree. And we're now on to a Supreme Court justice being just stolen, just flat out stolen.
From the black guy.
Because the Senate failed to hold hearings on Obama's nominee. The Senate failed to do it. No, the Senate didn't. Mitch McConnell failed. And Mitch McConnell is failing us now in terms of an investigation of Russia.
Mitch McConnell's not failing. He's succeeding.
Yeah, he is. Right. Exactly.
He's doing.
Exactly.
At stealing, at blocking, at wrecking, at slowing.
At the cover-up. And the cover-up.
And
absolutely.
Relies on his very good friends in the mainstream media to cover it up for him.
In exchange for access and ratings.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Because they have to sell that moderate to severe plaque psoriasis medication, right?
It's important,
right?
Blue Gal.
Yeah, it is.
You're gonna have a serious talk with your doctor finally about that.
Yeah, we're going to switch gears real quick because I had a letter to the editor in our local paper this week, and I wanted to share it. I shared it on Facebook, but not everyone is on Facebook, and I wanted to let people know that you are welcome to steal this letter and rewrite it for your own use. It is about Obamacare, and it is a way of doing what we talk about doing, something we were reminded of at Netroots Nation this year, which is lead with your values, stay local wherever possible, and come to a consensus on values and then sell your argument. And so we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I wanted to share this letter so you could see how this is done. And this letter was published with no changes at all by our local newspaper. I heard from many, many people who know me in town that they had seen it and read it. So, dear editors, and then I refer to an article that had been previously in the paper about Obamacare. Okay, and this one is just, it can be whatever it is. Charlotte Rampell's column of December 6th called Trump Should Keep This Part of Obamacare argues for maintaining medical payments based on healthcare outcomes as Republicans decide which parts of Obamacare they want to keep. Another part of Obamacare that Springfield and other communities might want to keep from Obamacare, the significant number of jobs created as millions of Americans gained access to affordable health insurance.
Jobs, jobs, jobs.
Yeah, and there's our values. We're local, Springfield, in your community, jobs. No one is going to say to you, I don't want jobs here in Springfield, or I don't want jobs in my town. Right.
Oh, don't want them jobs.
We all want jobs. Okay. Locally, Springfield Clinic saw a $16 million expansion in 2012, which was reported by the Associated Press as specifically built to handle the volume of patients gaining insurance through Obamacare. Central County's health centers on Cook Street opened a $4 million addition the same year. Those construction jobs were followed by increased permanent white-collar staffing at both locations. Mm-hmm. Again, it's local, it's specific. These are places where people who are reading this letter have been. And let me tell you something, old Tea Party Republicans love going to the doctor.
They love that.
They like their doctor, they like their Medicare, they like their nice, clean hospital clinic that may have been built during Obamacare. I swear to God, I saw an anti-Obamacare bumper sticker in the parking lot of Springfield Clinic. The clinic that was built in 2012 because of Obamacare.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they're going to drive right up and get all the great health care in that beautiful, brand new facility that they can. Right?
Because well, that's the schedule is you go there for the clinic, then you go to McEl's for the butterscotch pudding
and the
afternoon, the early bird special. Then it's a little bit of maybe Murder, She Wrote. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And then you fall asleep to Sean Hannity.
McEl's, by the way, people don't know what McEl's is a cafeteria restaurant that, you know, the early bird senior specials, you know, you get a sandwich and a vegetable for $5.
There's good value.
Good value.
Don't
so
lie, it's a good value.
And I have taken the girls there, and my youngest child whispered to me, "Is this restaurant for old people?" And you did. The butterscotch pie was probably as bad as anything they serve at Trump Grill.
It was a brick.
You could hang wallpaper with that stuff.
it stayed with me for a long time. Long time.
You only had two bites of it. Because you took one bite and you said, oh, it can't be that bad. I got to try it again.
Obviously, okay. My senses are broken. Anyway,
back to the letter. Both the American Hospital Association and the Federation of American Hospitals strongly oppose losing the increased patient load and improved Medicare funding stream that the Affordable Care Act has provided. Those funds mean not only better health outcomes for residents, but a source of much-needed good jobs for our community. And here's where you stick the knife in and they don't even feel it, okay? Republican Congressman John Shimkus, Darren LaHood, and Rodney Davis, now those are all local congressmen, now have an opportunity to pass legislation that will get signed by the Republican President Donald J. Trump. I hope their earlier votes to repeal Obamacare were merely symbolic protests, and that now that Obama is no longer president, they will put the health and economy of their districts before politics when it comes to the Affordable Care Act. It was really hard for me to write that paragraph without swearing, okay?
I heard all the excess swears coming through the room as you shed them from the letter.
You have to delete them. You can write them in and then you have to delete them. But the point is to hold these Republican congressmen by name responsible for what they're about to do.
Right, locally.
And locally. And if they are going to vote for your niece's nursing job to go away, they have to be held accountable for that. And the readers of this letter have to be given the opportunity to make that connection.
Yes.
And in an unthreatening way. Okay. So, I hope that's helpful to anybody who is interested in doing that. Feel free to grab all of this and put your local hospital and find out how much, how their situation has changed since Obamacare. I guarantee you, hospitals are in better shape now than they were before Obamacare.
Yeah.
And that is not necessarily, I mean, I had a couple trolls at the newspaper website say, yeah, it's just making hospitals rich. It's not helping any of us. My premiums went up. Okay. You know,
ignore them.
Yeah. But hospitals are going to be the ones that save those 19 million people who have healthcare now, because they have lobbyists and they're going to be the ones arguing for don't repeal this.
Well, and it doesn't hurt if you want to include a quote from President-elect Trump saying that he would replace Obamacare with something that would give you better healthcare at a fraction of the cost.
Fraction of the cost. Yep.
Yeah. And you should keep that one in your hip pocket.
Hold him to that promise in their letter. Yeah.
It will not affect Crazy Uncle Liberty at Thanksgiving or Christmas, who will not remember any of that. And you can quote it and you can show the video and you can have Donald Trump show it personally and repeat it live. And he still won't believe it because he's a meathead. But it does belong in your local paper.
Yeah. And it should be make sure it's local. Make sure it is connected to your community and your hospitals, because people perk up you always hear this back in the 80s when you and I took all of those seminars from consultants on how to do business.
Yes.
Everyone is tuned into the WII FM, What's In It For Me radio station.
Yep.
You have to say something that connects it to, oh, this is the hospital I go to to get my flu shot. This is the health center I go to have my eyes checked. This is the health center where if I fall, there that ambulance is going to come and get me.
Or my mom's home health care worker.
Yeah, right.
Lives there.
Right. Right. Usually it's someone in your family. I mean, oftentimes it's someone in their family because hospitals and prisons are the things that are hiring, you know, these days. So, okay. Drift glass.
Yes, blue gown.
You want to talk about, where do you want to start today? You want to talk about memory? You want to talk about Ta-Nehisi Coates?
You want to talk about Chris Hayes and Bernie Sanders?
Okay. Well, we can start there if you want to.
Sure. Let's swing into that.
Because we just have two parts of that to talk about. Bernie Sanders held kind of a town hall with Trump voters. In Trump country. And, you know, at some point, Chris Hayes is going to have Bernie Sanders on to meet with liberals and find out about their concerns. And maybe meet with some of the 69 million people who voted for Hillary Clinton, find out how they feel.
Well, I'm still waiting for David Brooks to drive by and, you know, ask me why I'm so pissed off. Again,
you're white. You're a guy. You're unemployed.
I'm a white, unemployed, middle class, Rust Belt American of a certain age who's pissed. And I'm waiting for David Brooks to show up at my house and ask me, you know.
Did your parents immigrate here legally?
Yes, they did. To my knowledge,
your great, great, great grandparents from Ireland.
Well, you know, a lot of people from Missouri were not given admittance to Illinois, but
they
snuck in somehow. I think they went through Montana to get back here, but
much
longer story.
Just remember, everybody, if your people came here before 1924 and they're not Asian, and that's an important distinction, if you're white and your people came here before 1924, there were no immigration laws for them to be obedient to.
No.
Okay. You came to Ellis Island. And if you didn't have TB, you got in and you didn't need paperwork and you didn't need a green card and you didn't need nothing. You moved to the neighborhood in New York City where all your people already were, and your ward boss showed up and got you registered to vote. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
You're a citizen. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah. So all this stuff about, well, you know, my people didn't have these problems. Yeah, no, they didn't.
You're right.
You're Irish.
Everybody who was there before had already been wiped out, so come on in.
Yeah, right. Well, and there was a labor shortage, and so there was plenty of room for people to just come in, and they didn't get alarmed about it. The African-Americans who emigrated here had been forced against their will into this country, and Asians, as soon as it was clear that they were there were far too, quote unquote, many of them coming over to build the railroads, that got cut off by an act of Congress. So, racism live and well.
Yeah.
So
Chris Hayes.
Chris Hayes. And speaking of white people.
There was a moment. It was a much longer conversation. It was a town hall meeting. But there was a real interesting moment. That I think we have to talk about, which really highlighted what the difference is that all this, these past, I don't know, years, one of the things that always interests me as a writer, especially, is how we fail to talk to each other, how we keep using the same English language, more or less. And we keep radically misunderstanding each other.
And at the risk of avoid at the impulse of not avoiding, I don't know how to put this, to make sure we are not misleading people.
Yes.
You and I are not relitigating the primaries.
No.
And you and I voted for Hillary Clinton.
Yes, we did.
Happily so. Yeah. And supported her. Mm-hmm. And so we are not interested in relitigating the primaries. And we are not interested in asking what if, because those kind of questions are not helpful, number one. And number two, we're still busy mourning the loss of Ted Kennedy in 1980. So.
I'm drinking my coffee out of my fading but still recognizable Bernie mug right now.
Yeah.
And middle
child wore her Bernie t-shirt to school today.
You're not going to pick a fight in our house over voting for the Democratic Party candidate.
Right.
There's no way to do it. You're not going to flip anybody. You're not going to get anybody fighting.
Well, and to vote against the Republican candidate. Yeah. And I mean, those are the two impetuses of our family is we do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But there was a very interesting moment that really speaks to how we keep either deliberately misstating facts to make our case, or we just don't understand each other at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was Bernie Sanders was making the point that what's vexing America is political correctness.
Yeah.
Now, you and I have a pretty clear understanding of what that means, right? And Chris Hayes had the presence of mind to say, what do you mean exactly by political correctness? And I'm going to do my Bernie Sanders. Imagine me shaking my hand over my head in kind of a loose, fingery kind of way. You know, this is what I mean. I'll tell you, Chris, here's what I mean. It's about trade policy. You know, the trade policy in this country is terrible. We're not allowed to talk about it. And that's what's making people so mad.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
everyone went, what? And so Chris Hayes had the presence of mind to say, okay, show of hands. Everybody in the audience who thinks political correctness is about trade policy, raise your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody raised their hand. Now, everyone who thinks political correctness is about how you are and are not allowed to talk about people who are different than you, raise your hand. Everybody raised their hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders, I know people like this. Bernie Sanders is kind of an old line Marxist.
Yeah. And as you say, we know guys like this for whom everything is about class and the revolution.
Yeah, the class and the revolution.
That's the only that's the only window they look through the world.
That's it. That's it.
That's
it. I have and they usually are pretty well off relative to everyone around them. Mm-hmm. It's not like they are struggling proletariats. They're in the upper class somewhere, and their hearts are more or less in the right place. But, you know, when I hear from a friend of mine in Chicago who's an old line, you know, labor organizing communist who is like, well, I was shocked by the Trump victory, but now it's a chance to highlight the contradictions. You know, it's to show the corruption of the entire system. Like, okay, because it's about class. It's all about class. So Bernie Sanders cannot wrap his head around the fact that there are some things in this country that are about race.
Yep. Or gender.
Or gender.
Yep.
Or anything.
Yep.
Everything has to be about the class struggle. It's about the class struggle, Chris, and the trade. And there's truth in that.
Well, and he calls it income inequality instead because that's a more modern term, but he's still talking about exactly the same thing. I mean, he's consistent since the 60s.
And his analysis.
And that's the beauty of Marxism, is that it really is a contained system that you can carry with you throughout your whole 70-year career, right?
Well, yeah. And the analysis of capitalism is correct. The analysis of the fatal flaws and the inevitable outcome of letting capitalism run wild is perfectly accurate. The solutions are often ludicrous. You know, they don't work. They fly in the face of human nature. But the people who are just absolutely raised on it, you know, the what do they used to call them? Red diaper babies, you know, people raised in the pure faith from birth
of Marxism.
Accept the fact that class is important, but it isn't everything. And every person is not motivated by a class conflict. You cannot, in this country, disentangle race and class or gender and class. You can't do it. And Bernie Sanders keeps insisting, and this is really kind of a window into his mind, and the mind of a lot of people, is that they can't talk to people for whom race is the most important, most immediate and dangerous issue in their life, because they keep bending the conversation back to class. And let's talk about income inequality. Let's talk about trade. And let's talk about plutocrats. That's great. But what you're doing is you're telling me that my lived reality, not me, I'm a middle-aged white guy, so this is not my personal reality, but the lived reality of millions of Americans is simply irrelevant to you. You just don't see it. And I think that's incredibly important to think about that for a little while, because if you are telling either through action or through gesture or through emphasis, basically the base of the Democratic Party, who are made up mostly of people of color, their lived experience is simply irrelevant to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you just go along with the revolution, the revolution, everything will be fine. It's bullshit.
And they know it's bullshit. Yes. And women know it's bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really.
Oh, yeah.
The number of women who have been treated like shit in revolutionary movements
is 100%.
For hundreds of years.
100%.
Hundreds of years. Yeah. And interestingly enough, the New York Times had a subtitle today, I believe. Democrats at the crossroads, win back working class whites or let them go. And the sub heading was, and this, I am not making this up, someone did a screenshot of it. The party is at odds over whether it should tailor its message to the young and non-white constituencies that propelled President Obama, or make an effort to court moderate voters.
Well, you know who that's aimed at? That's aimed at David Brooks and his neighbors.
Yeah. Oh, and I've been told now by Bloggin' Florida of New York City, New York. New York City, America, to leave Upper West Side alone, because all of the David Brooks types that you're talking about live on the Upper East Side. Upper West Side. We don't know these things. We live in a cornfield.
Yeah. Well, so all I know is from... I can't remember the movie, the Shore Leave movie with Gene Kelly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Anchors Away or one of those, that's right? We're going to get mail about that. Yeah.
Song. So we'll
on play. The town, on the town.
Everything,
yes.
I know about New York geography is from that. And Ghostbusters. Okay, I'll give you that, Ghostbusters. But there is...
young and non-white constituencies or moderate voters?
Really?
Which ones do you want to choose, Democrats?
Democrats. But that is, the subtext of that is the same as it's been for the last God knows how many years, which is, let's find that moderate, sensible center where only, you know, wealthy people on the Upper East Side live. And we're going to talk a lot about that in a few minutes about Ta-Nehisi Coates and Barack Obama and Charlie Pierce. But first, I think it's important we focus on one of the subjects that we always touch on, and that you and I have been writing about one way or another since we began blogging, really, is memory. The mutilation and manipulation of memory, and how important it is for liberals to do what the Irish did during the Dark Ages, which is copy books.
Yeah.
I mean, as civilization gets dark in this country, someone has to be in charge of not forgetting. Of not forgetting what's, because there's a lot of people who are deeply invested in just erasing the past and rewriting it any way they fucking well feel like.
Yep.
And
yep.
They have a lot of money. They have a lot of power. They have the White House. They have the Congress. And they're weak, because if your whole ideology depends on lying constantly, if you can't bear the light at all, then you're inherently weak. But you have a lot of power, which is, I know, seems weird, but it's actually true. So it's up to us. It's up to you and me, us liberals out there, to keep that little light burning and remember what really happened. And there was this example this week.
Well, before you do that, what you just said is a perfect, perfect segue into Bible Bitch.
Oh, see?
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural. Matthew 10. I'm not going to waste a lot of time explaining it, but because you just did. You just explained it.
Man.
This is Matthew 10. This is what Jesus said to the disciples as he told them to go out into the field for him and his ministry. And this is from the Message, which is the modern translation. Jesus sent his 12 harvest hands out with this charge. Don't begin by traveling to some far-off place to convert unbelievers. And don't try to be dramatic by tackling some public enemy. Go to the lost, confused people right here in the neighborhood. Tell them that the kingdom is here. Bring health to the sick, raise the dead, touch the untouchables, kick out the demons. You have been treated generously, so live generously. Don't be naive. Some people will impugn your motives. Others will smear your reputation. Don't be upset. Without knowing it, they've done you and me a favor, given you a platform. And don't worry about what you'll say or how you'll say it. The right words will be there. Don't be intimidated. Eventually, everything is going to be out in the open, and everyone will know how things really are. So don't hesitate to go public now. Don't be bluffed into silence by the threats of bullies. There's nothing they can do to your soul, your core being. Save your fear for God, who holds your entire life, body and soul, in His hands. And and then one last thing. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. That's it.
Nice.
I just thought that was so in keeping with what you just said.
You don't need to be a Bible person or even be religious to believe this stuff.
Yep.
But if you ever wondered, how the hell did people walk into fire hoses and walk into dogs, knowing they were probably going to get hurt really bad and with no faith at all that this action was going to make their world any better. But they just kept lining up to be soldiers in that civil rights war.
Absolutely.
Overwhelming odds against a country that hated them, wanted them dead, and were perfectly okay with lynching them when the sun went down.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept coming. It's that kind of faith in the future.
Well, and that's, as I said, that's why I do Bible Bitch in part. It's not so much, I mean, I want to provide hope for people, but I also want to illustrate that nothing that we are dealing with is new. And that none of the battles that we are fighting are alien to what they dealt with in the first century and before that. And I think about those words that were written, you know, by some monk somewhere and rewritten by monks and nuns and scribes and people all through history. And then, as you say, the civil rights workers in the 60s and the children who walked into fire hoses and got arrested. And I think of the 10-year-old boy today who's CNN tweeted holding a baby in Aleppo.
Uh-huh.
And he had 43 orphans with him. And he said, these are my brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Please help us. Please help us get out of Aleppo. And he spoke. I mean, and people were crying all over Twitter. I'm not going to cry right now because I've already cried about it today. So I won't do that. But the firmness of his voice in speaking to the camera and knowing that who he was speaking to, knowing his audience and speaking on behalf of the little ones, the youngers, was so brave. It was, he gave his name. He said that his parents had died and what they were afraid of. And, you know, they're afraid of the bombs. They're afraid of the shelling and they can't go outside and they can't go anywhere. And the Russian government won't let them out because they're civilians.
Right.
And the Russian from the UN Security Council claims that they're actors.
Right.
You know, this is the evil that we're dealing with.
Right.
And now that guy works for the same guy that helped our president get into office.
That's right.
And it's, but it is no different from Herod, folks.
Yeah.
It's the same fight. It's the same damn fight. And we are strong enough and we have, power, the power of love. I mean, I'm not going to turn into a Huey Lewis and the news song here, but we have the power of, I don't know where I'm going with now, but I just want you to know it's not new. I'm losing it because of that kid.
That's okay. But, why don't you take a breath and I'll wind it back.
Yep.
And this is just something I wrote this week because we're talking about Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, see, you go from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah, but,
and now, I can breathe again.
Which
but it is the same story. Nothing, yes, it is.
Nothing is more terrifying to a political and media regime built on ever more ridiculous lies than the simple act of remembering the past as it really happened and speaking that truth out loud.
Well, and let's not forget, too, that when you speak the truth like that, or when the truth comes out, there is panic. There is real panic.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. And you can tell that there's panic at Fox News
over this
Russia thing. Yeah.
My point was, this makes you and me and liberals like us the most dangerous people in America.
Yep. Yep.
Because we just keep talking about shit that you're not supposed to talk about. And now there's now officially you're not supposed to talk about it because you might get attacked by the president-elect on the Twitter. But Jeanine Pirro, the point was how desperate they are to erase the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they ever have to face it, there's no salvation for them. They cannot look with a straight face at the camera and say what they're saying now and reconcile that with the shit they've been doing the last 8 years. So one of two things has to happen. They have to have a come to Jesus moment. And suddenly the scales fall from their eyes and they decide to give up their $20 million job lying to, you know, morons on Fox and tell the truth for 2 minutes and get fired. Or they need to just fucking go all in and lie and lie and lie and lie, knowing that the morons and bigots and pinheads they're lying to pay them to do that.
Yep.
That's their job. So I'm not going to run through the whole thing, but Jeanine Pirro, who who styles herself as a judge, is on Fox News. She's a Fox News lady, and she made this really bold statement about the incoming president. And I'm just going to read you a bit of it. We have a new president-elect. His name is Donald J. Trump. So move over, Barack. Move over, Hillary, Harry, Jill, and all you namby-pamby pathetic losers still crying in your grande double-shot skinny lattes. Because that's standard issue, wing nut, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There was a time in this country when we united behind the flag in celebration of America's new president, our new leader. We all did so in 2008 when Barack Obama was elected. And, believe it or not, I heard...
We had high hopes for a united country, irrespective of our politics, she said.
That's right. We all got behind him and pushed so hard to try to kill him. You tried to push him in front of a freight train is what you tried to do. Now, here's the thing. You know, just out, I encounter this all the time. I encounter people, grown-up adult people, who say the media just beat the hell out of that poor George Bush, but you never heard a single bad story about Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah. And they're saying it on Twitter today. They say it today. No one ever disrespected Barack Obama the way they're disrespecting Donald J. Trump.
And
they don't remember birtherism. They don't remember birtherism.
They don't remember the Tea Party. They don't remember the right. They don't remember Barack Obama as a Kenyan usurper. They don't remember Barack Obama as Hitler. They don't remember any of it because, and this is the important part, they don't get their news from the news. They get their news from an open dumpster called Fox. And Fox tells them that no one ever said anything bad about Barack Obama. And that is what they believe. The news is.
Yep.
They believe that if they just say Solyndra, then it's like a magic word and it'll stop liberals in their tracks. Oh my God, he found out the magic word. Now we have to curl up and die. But the presumption is always that those of us on the left are as stupid and as head up our ass bottomized as you fucking conservatives are. And we're not. And that's what's terrifying to them. When you say, but don't you remember this and 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 this, they look at you like you're cheating. You're not supposed to say that. That's not, no.
Yeah.
And then they change the subject. And after they change the subject and you beat them at that gambit and that gambit, eventually what comes out? Well, you know how both sides are.
Yeah.
You know, both sides do this sort of thing. This really is nothing new. Both sides are really to blame. And then they run away because they're fucking cowards. They can't stand the light at all. And what they're trying to do is make the darkness all present, all consuming, because they can't tolerate looking at what they themselves were saying and doing 2 years ago, because their fucking heads would explode. So it's really important to them that they keep pouring money down the Fox, Hate Radio, Breitbart rat hole to keep paying whores like Judge Jeanine Pirro to tell them what they want to hear, which is why it's really important for us broke ass, cornfield resistance liberals to just keep remembering, keep recalling and keep saying it out loud. What really happened is really important.
And you and I have had personal one-on-one interactions with folks who try to have a political conversation with us as if they are Rand Paul at the historically black university. I wasn't going to get a specific one, but yet Howard University saying, well, you know, let me tell you about the history of the 1950s and the civil rights movement. Yeah. And I know your experience has been slightly different than mine. The person that tried to bring this up with me and is always very jovial about it. I mean, we kind of he ribs me and I rib him back. And it's not kind of both of us know we're not going to convince the other person of anything. However, this last time he said to me, are you over it yet? And I said, you know what? And this was this past weekend when the Russian thing had come out. He said, you know what? Vladimir Putin has convinced me that I don't think I'm ever going to get over it. And his response was, I just want you to know that this person was never my choice.
Right, right.
And it wasn't both siderist, and it wasn't I'm an independent, and it wasn't I don't take responsibility. It was I want you to know, and he really did want me to know.
Right.
I mean, he genuinely wanted me to know that this was not, you know, this person is a Jeb Bush Republican. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Right. That's what he is, you know. And you know, he would have voted for Ted Cruz, sure, held his nose and voted for Ted Cruz. But, you know, I do think he wrote in
Gary
Casey.
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson. Maybe he voted for Gary Johnson. Yeah. You know, he's that kind of person. So whatever. But you also had a personal one-on-one with someone who took it a lot farther, right?
On a regular basis. But yeah, it's like, and it's always this shift, you know, shifting the other foot. They do. I mean, they have been programmed. Yeah. This is what you have to understand. You are, and I'm going to jump a little bit ahead in our notes here.
Sure.
You are not dealing with a political ideology. You're dealing with an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
We've said this before, but you're dealing with someone who is hooked on the dumpster bullshit that they eat every day and consume as news. They're as addicted to that as anybody is to heroin or alcohol or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And like any other addict, they would rather die than admit to having a problem. And they always have a million excuses why nothing is ever their fault. And there's always a strategy for deflection, deflection, deflection. So when I beat you with this argument, we'll move on to the next. Well, you know, Barack Obama had 2 years. A Congress, just to do anything he wanted to do. I said, do you mean 7 months, right? What do you mean? Well, you know, Ted Kennedy died. And then again, I get that look like, that's cheating. You're not supposed to remember that. Fuck. And then it's run away.
Yeah,
and then it's run away.
Yeah,
then, well, you know, I just can't, you know, people just can't even talk politics anymore. No, what you want is someone to agree with your fucking insanity. And there's a whole group of them over on that side of the room. So why don't you go talk to them? But when you come over here, don't bring that shit into my house.
Right, right.
I will eat you alive.
And if there's an audience, and often with you there is, usually it's around some table somewhere.
I'll just clap
where other people are just, they are paying attention to you. Yeah, yeah.
And I will be as gracious as can be, and I won't say fuck.
You don't raise your voice. You do not raise your voice or say fuck at all. No, you don't.
Which is why you stay the hell away from me, because it's not even a fair fight, which is why conservatives can't afford a fair fight, which is why they have to cheat at voting and wipe people off the voting rolls and roll back your rights. And right across the board, they have to cheat because they don't have the mental firepower let me back up. It's not that they don't have the smarts. They don't have an ideology to support anymore. They have an addiction.
Yeah.
And the difference is you can do an intervention with an alcoholic. I come from a family where there is alcoholism problems.
Mm-hmm.
I've discussed this once or twice before. But interventions don't work with Republicans because there's an entire shopping mall full of bullshit ideas that's always open 24 hours a day.
Yeah,
and no one's going to fire you for believing that Hillary Clinton murdered Vince Foster. You know, it's not going to interfere with your work. It's just going to
actually, you know, I've come up with a new name for my garage band Drift Glass.
Yeah.
It's Killery at the Pizza Joint.
Yeah.
Because there are people out there that really believe that she killed and ate babies.
Right. At a pizza place.
At a pizza place.
Satan.
And
but once again, you are not dealing with a rational person when you're dealing with a conservative anymore. It's a good rule of thumb. If it's 1987, yeah, fine. You're talking about Milton Friedman. You're talking about supply side economics. That's great. You're happy. But if you're still on board and under the Trump presidency, your fucking mind is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a lot of other skills and a lot of other things you're really good at, but your political mind is just goo. I mean, there's nothing left upstairs to reason with. So attempts to reason with them are always going to fail because.
Well, and I want to say something about that, though. And I'm not making excuses for anyone that is defending Trump in this age, but I do believe that there is a level of poison between those who have been lifelong Republicans and have sort of a film barrier between reality of these are my people, really, and they really just don't want to believe that things could be that bad.
Right. They're called good Germans.
Right. Good Germans. Yeah. Okay. Good Germans and those who go on social media and actually clap back and talk back to you and say, Trump won, you lost, get over it. That group of people, those are the ones that, you know, those are the Germans that proudly slap that swastika on their arm.
Well,
And I do think there are degrees of difference, not degrees of responsibility.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's degrees of difference, but I don't think interventions don't work either group. Deprogramming might work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
just taking them into a room for a week and, you know, and holding up, spraying Trump cologne at them and slapping them every time you do it. That might work. There's no, my theory is as borne out by direct observation and scientific method, is that there's this theory, there's a normal brain covered by layers of shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you just keep digging down and digging down, no, Barack Obama didn't set up a terrorist camp in Peoria. No, Barack Obama didn't. No. If you just keep debunking and debunking and debunking, drilling down further and further, eventually you'll hit the healthy tissue. And there is no healthy tissue. Mm-hmm. It's bullshit all the way down. But the bullshit that goes all the way down in some brains is Sandy Hook was a false flag operation.
Yeah, right.
And the bullshit
right.
with the good Germans is, well, you know how both sides are, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
both sides are pretty bad when it comes to this sort of thing. And I've just got to go with the guy who's going to give me tax cuts. You know, it's a change election. Yep. And, you know, you got to disrupt the system if you want things to change. But all that person, that second person is doing is cowardly rationalizing being on board with a bunch of Nazis and Klansmen, et cetera.
Yep.
They're just justifying
it.
When they go home to their wife and say, you know, there were a lot of Nazis there, but, you know, I stood up and told them, it's Paul Ryan.
Yeah, it's Paul Ryan.
I'm not cool with all the racism and white supremacy, but, you know, he'll let me voucherize Medicare, so.
Right, so I'm going to go along with him because he's the president of the United States now. Right,
They all have to go. They're in different circles of hell, but they all belong there. So don't treat conservatives like they have an ideology that you can talk to them about, no matter how sophisticated, no matter how well-spoken they are.
But Ayn Rand, Driftglass.
You're dealing with a junkie. Well, I tell you what, let's roll back just for a minute to the Chris Hayes, Bernie Sanders show.
Okay. All right.
Woman.
The woman. Can I explain what she was all about?
Is she a Sherlock Holmes character? No, that's not the woman.
No, that's not the woman. There was a woman at the Chris Hayes event that was sure she was going. She said she was going to college to get a better job at the factory that she worked at, and that she knew for a fact that there were illegals who were getting better jobs than she was, and that they avoided taxes and parking tickets, right?
Yeah.
Speeding tickets.
A weird ass, you know, thing that I'm sure.
Tickets.
Yeah.
They avoided tickets. And they avoided all of the taxes by just going back to Mexico and hiding until the storm passed.
Right.
And the point is that you and I both know that there are people that crazy in the world.
Sure.
We're not surprised that one of them showed up at this event. We're not surprised that that person wound up on the stage with a microphone.
And talking loudly because she knows what she believes.
She heard it on the radio, too.
I heard it on the news. It was on the news in the radio.
And what did surprise me was that neither Bernie Sanders nor Chris Hayes said anything to her.
Uh-huh.
Asked her one question about, you mean your company hires illegal immigrants or undocumented, and he did correct himself and say undocumented immigrants. You mean that they leave Wisconsin and go to Mexico to hide during tax time and then come back and still have their job.
And she would have answered yes to every one of those questions.
Well, she may have, but the audience, which was not all Trump supporters, would have started laughing.
Right.
And that was my point, was, you know, at some point, if you push back enough, just with, because on the face of it, her argument was ridiculous. It is like the Reddit thing of, we went through and all of these words in the email, pizza, pepperoni,
right,
sauce, all mean something related to child pornography and murder.
Right. It's all code.
You know, and just believing that. So we knew that she believed what she was saying, that she'd gotten on the stage and been given a microphone. What I couldn't believe is that Chris Hayes and Bernie Sanders just let it pass.
Well,
this is how fake news gets to stay.
Let me just say that on the face of it, John Kerry knew nobody would believe what the Swift boat assholes were saying.
Exactly.
It was so
exactly.
Wrong.
No, right.
That's
right.
Wrong.
Right.
It is the responsibility of journalists, and Chris Hayes is still a journalist, to go up to this woman, and this is where you and I took it a little bit further, to ask her, are you seriously telling me And she would have answered, yes, 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 yes. I saw it in the news. I saw it in CNN. Yes. But then
Google it yourself. You know, you'll find it.
Look, you Google it. You Google it. It's out there. I saw it in the news. And I have no doubt that this poor, dumb, you know, farm animal of a person actually believes this shit. And you're never going to talk her out of it. But then I believe it's the responsibility of a journalist to sit down next to her and say, ma'am, you know all the problems with this country that we're facing right now? You are the problem. You personally are the disease that is killing this country. That's on you. And I know you're never going to believe it and you're going to accept it. You're going to run away from it. But I want everyone here in the audience, I'd like the spotlight down on her right now. She is what's wrong with America. And as long as people like this vote and you don't, we're going to get fascists in the White House. Period. Because there's no way to stop her. She'll go home and tell all of her friends how she got them liberals on that. They'll all applaud her, and then she'll turn on Sean, and she'll be reassuring, and then she'll go on InfoWars, and they'll tell her what she wants to hear. So she's lost. Okay, she's dead from the neck up. But ma'am, I say this with all sincerity, you are what's killing this country. Period. I think at this point, that is the job of a journalist, to point at the fire and the person standing next to the fire with the can of gasoline and the lighter and say, you are the arsonist. You are the problem. And you can't, because, again, you want to sell those reverse mortgages.
Yeah, right.
You want to sell those dick pills. And you're not going to do that by pointing to nice little old ladies and nice little old men in their ball caps and their stern faces who are brave enough to get up in front of the liberal cameras and say, no, you're full of shit and you are what's killing this country.
Yep.
Last but not least.
Yeah.
This is a longer subject, so we're just going to touch on it briefly because we're running up against our hour.
We are.
This is about Ta-Nehisi Coates, Charlie Pierce, and the problem of the too decent president. And Ta-Nehisi Coates has written a very long article in The Atlantic, which is linked at my place and linked everywhere else, and you can go find it. It's entitled My President Was Black. It's a really wonderful article. It's very long. It's also very good. It traces Barack Obama's history from his childhood. It answers actually some of the questions I had about Barack Obama that I would have asked him if I had ever had a chance to ask him. And the answers were exactly what I thought they would be. That's sort of my it confirmed my biases.
Yeah.
My bias was that Barack Obama never got into a fight as a kid. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever beat him up. And largely that
was not bullied.
He was not bullied. He was raised in essentially a beautiful walled garden full of very tolerant people. By the time he was ready to sort of go into the world, he had a passport literally stamped from travels all over the world. He had the doors were being opened to him, and he almost was never around people who said a harsh word or behaved in a racist way.
Well, when you mentioned his tennis coach, that's when I just lost
his tennis coach said racist things and that upset him.
Yeah. And you, speaking as someone who is bullied, and I know you were bullied physically and mentally, and I was bullied physically and mentally as well, we both kind of shook our heads at this, that, you know, okay, well, this is how he got to the point where he could not believe that Mitch McConnell would be this awful. Because he had not had the experience in middle school and high school of, oh no, people will just hit you. People will just walk over to your desk and break your pencil and throw it in your face just because they don't like you, just because you're slightly different, just because they know you're smarter than they are. And
the people in charge of that facility will not protect you.
Will not protect you.
Because you're an outsider. Yep. You're not of the body. And they will let the cop's son kick the shit out of you because they're both do the pancake breakfast.
So
what it means to be an outsider for Barack Obama is to be this sort of person in Hawaii and Kansas and to be different. But Mr. Coates walks us through the Harold Washington days in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Harold Washington actually had to pay a price for being a black outsider in Chicago who came up through the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he got racism right up in his face his whole life. And he turned out to be a very good mayor and would have been a great mayor had he not died. But they talked to David Axelrod and say, you know, Harold Washington had an edge to him. Mm-hmm. You know, Harold Washington knew that these white people hated him. And that's something he had to deal with. And Barack Obama, this is something that Mr. Coates talks about in the article, deep in the article. And this is something that Charlie Pierce talked about with Chris Hayes, or talked about somewhat. And I'm just going to quote one little piece from Mr. Coates' long article, which is, Obama's greatest misstep was born directly out of his greatest insight. Mm-hmm. Only Obama, a black man who emerged from the best of white America and thus could sincerely trust white America, could be so certain that he could achieve broad national appeal. True. Mm-hmm. And yet only a black man with that same biography could underestimate his opposition's resolve to destroy him. And that is exactly what happened. And I just, for the sake of the record, Mr. Coates wrote this, you know, this week in The Atlantic. Yeah. This is the end of the year, the year of our Lord, 2016. I went back to 2010 and put a post that I wrote saying pretty much exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
That Barack Obama had this unique childhood, unique experience, unique skill set that made him essentially a mathematical function.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be in the middle, controlling the process from the center. And he never understood that there are people who are out to destroy the process itself just because they fucking hate him. And they hate liberals. And they hate Democrats. And they want to burn the system down. And he never wrapped his head around that level of hatred.
Mm-hmm.
As a consequence for all of us, he kept giving second chances to people he should have been putting his boot on their throat and humiliating them in public. And every
Now, looking back on the 8 years that Barack Obama has been president, he should have been yelling at the Congress, "You lie."
Exactly.
From at the State of the Union. You know, you guys are the problem. You are lying. Your media lies. You have a propaganda network that lies. Fox News lies. And he tried, but the minute he opened his mouth about, a Harvard professor arrested in his own house,
His approval rating dropped, and suddenly he wasn't the great, you know, untouchable man. And again, this is a really long article, but here's another short piece. Mm-hmm. Studying the 2016 election, political scientist Phil Klinkner found that the most predictive question for understanding whether a voter favored Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump was, is Barack Obama a Muslim?
Mm.
He never got it. He never got how deep that hatred was and how they would rather burn the place down than let him govern it.
Yeah.
And he kept trying to find middle ground with people who kept viewing everything he was doing as weakness. Oh, my God, he's giving us half his lunch money. Let's ask for 3/4 of it. Oh, my God, he gave us 3/4 of it. Let's ask for all of it. Oh, he gave us all of it. Let's ask for the shirt off his back.
Mm-hmm.
And let's make really clear that our goal is to humiliate you and then beat you and undo everything you did, all while calling you N-word to your face.
Mm-hmm.
And he just is not wired to process that information. And that blind spot wrecked it. I mean, he's the greatest president of my lifetime. He might be one of the greats. His legacy will go on and on. There's a lot of other stuff there. But in this specific way of being unable to fathom that the person coming at you with a knife is really going to knife you.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly dangerous, and it's born out of the fact that he was raised this whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Washington would never have made this mistake.
Yeah, yep.
And
Harold Washington, here's the deal. Harold Washington would have never been accepted by white liberals.
Exactly.
And that is the part that gets me, and maybe it's just because I'm already depressed about Aleppo that I'm sort of coloring everything this way. We talk about conservatives on this show and how, you know, they're blind this, they're blind that. There's no cure for what they are. We have a lot of self-examination to do ourselves. You wrote in our notes, Obama was great about talking about who we would like to be, but terrible at facing who we actually are. And Ta-Nehisi Coates was talking about America. But that's just true specifically about white Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And white women who now, you know, watch Fox News for news and think that that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get a chance to talk, you know, that the thing is Fox. I've been saying this on Twitter all week. Whenever somebody mentions it, it's on Fox. It's on Fox. It's on Fox.
Right.
Fox News, as someone at Crooks and Liars pointed out to me, is basic cable.
Yeah.
Whereas CNN, many of the CNN channels and MSNBC are not. And that's a deal. But as you pointed out to me, Rudy Giuliani had a part to play in making sure that Fox News got into the New York City cable market as basic cable. And so that's news for, you know, the majority of people who watch news watch Fox for news.
Yes, they do.
In this country. We've got work to do, and we have to stop now, Driftglass.
But we have so much work to do, Blue Gal.
I know. Well, let's get going.
All right.
Hey, you know what we can do? Next week, we can do another podcast. Oh. And we can hear from our listeners this week as well.
We just keep doing this podcast, and we just keep trying to help people out. And remind them that you're not alone. Man,
you're not alone.
The number of emails I've gotten in the last couple of weeks, but the ones I've been trying to respond to are people just who were giving me like really personal. I went and I had this confrontation with a family member and I don't know what to do. And it's hard, but you're not alone. There's some consolation in the knowledge that you are the normal one. You're the majority. You didn't win because the system is rigged to make sure you don't win unless you vote overwhelmingly, unless you can get 70% of the people in this country on your side, you're not going to win. But we're the majority, and you're not alone. And we're living the same reality you are.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's of some...
And there are some days it is hard, and there are some days that it's easier. And we're going to carry each other through. Mm-hmm. And they are exposing themselves in ways that are really scary for our democracy. But in the end, it's going to blow up in their faces. And, I mean, we're really seeing that in North Carolina right now. It's just crazy how the legislature is just deciding that, no, the election's illegitimate if we don't win. You know, that is the Republican way.
It's a coup. Right now in North Carolina, there's a coup going on because they can't win without someone's meaty hand on the scale, whether that's James Comey or Vladimir Putin or the mainstream media.
Or the North Carolina legislature.
Exactly.
Yep. All right. We'll stop there. But okay. I love you, Driftglass. I love you very much.
You can send us your internet kitty.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. But this week's kitties are, of course, our own Olive and Barack. We left Zeppo off of this one.
Yes.
She's sitting right here on the dining room table, and she's going to be okay, she said, this week. She'll take the week off.
I'll be okay.
But Olive and Barack, they are essentially twins, fraternal twins. And Barack is getting a lot more exercise than he expected to get, I think, because Olive, our new cat, likes to wrestle.
Uh-huh.
So you want to go over and check them out over at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! And oh, do we feel for you the week before Christmas and it's down to, you know, 9 degrees above, not with the wind chill, and you've got a lot to do. And we're thinking of all of our postal workers and delivery people. We appreciate you so much. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. I do want to say that those of you that are shopping at Amazon, you just have to go to professionalleft.blogspot.com. You'll see an Amazon button. Click on it and shop. And we get a kickback from that. It doesn't tell you we are getting one. It doesn't give you a receipt that tells you we are getting one. And we don't know from the experience at Amazon of getting paid the percentage, who you are or where you come from. All we get to see are the items that are sold.
Right. It's all magic.
Right. But we don't get to see your name and address, and you don't get a receipt. And it's completely blind to us and blind to you that this is how it's happening. But trust us when we say that if you use our link and then buy something, we do get a percentage of that back. And the only way you can really tell that is there is a proleft-20 in the URL. When you click that link, you'll see that. That shows that you are shopping on our behalf.
Oh, crap.
But you don't have to worry about that. Just click on the link and shop.
I feel bad then.
But someone tweeted me today and say, how do I know, or how do I let them know, or how do I get in touch with Amazon customer service? No. Don't waste any time with that. Just click the link and shop. That's all you have to do.
I feel bad though, because I've been shopping through something called the Wilco majority, and now I feel really stupid because I've been throwing all my business to
all of our, I hate to say it, but all of our IP addresses in this house are exempt from getting a kickback.
Yeah, crap.
Would that we did, because, you know, the kids need a lot of books for different things, and they know that just go to Amazon and get it, because I don't have time to go shopping for you, so... they're very skilled at getting what they need for school and so forth very quickly because mom's busy, but, and I take advantage of that.
Mom's busy doing the damn podcast. Everybody shut up.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But that's okay because they know that's what buys their books at Amazon. Oh, it's all connected.
Circle of life, baby.
See? Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are very interested in one of those California climate change satellite jobs.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living.
Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Class, Blue Gal Podcast.